Podcasting from Dallas, Texas, I am Shireen, and this is the Yumlish Podcast. Yumlish empowers people with chronic conditions like type 2 diabetes and heart disease to take charge of their health through diet. And this podcast is created to amplify the voices of patients, health professionals, employers, and community members who are working to reduce the risk of these chronic diseases and put your health first. We have a special treat for you today. We are bringing our own Yumlish dietitian to the spotlight. Registered dietitian Karina Soto of Yumlish talks to us about the prevalence of diabetes in the Latino community and the contributing factors to that, her culturally relevant approach to nutrition therapy, an approach we pride ourselves on. She then talks about the misconceptions around diabetes in the Latino community, as well as grocery shopping habits in the Latino community. This is going to be a good one. Stay tuned. Registered dietitian Karina Soto, who is a bilingual registered dietitian, is joining us today. She has a master's degree in clinical nutrition, worked for the Department of Health and Human Services at Dallas City, and for the Health Department over in Mexico. She's also the lead dietitian at Yumlish and provides culturally relevant nutrition therapy to our patients. Welcome, Karina.
Hi, thank you for having me today. I'm so excited.
Absolutely. We have all these registered dietitians on our podcast, and we haven't had you on here, and you're part of our business, so good time to bring you on.
Thank you.
All right, so Karina, diving right in, what led you to work within nutrition and then have the specific focus on the Latino population?
Well, I was born and raised in Mexico, so I've been always been very passionate about natural science. And, you know, in high school, I was dividing between study, food chemistry, or medicine. And both of my parents, they are gastronomy engineers. So my dad told me, hey, what about nutrition? It seems like a perfect match for you, like a perfect combination. And he gave me an old book of nutrition that he used in college. And I just fall in love about the idea of being able to cure and impact people's life through food. So that led me to study my bachelor's in nutrition, my master's degree in clinical nutrition. And in Mexico, I had the opportunity to work in the medical nutrition therapy, mainly in chronic diseases, under nutrition, under 5 years old, pregnant women in more than 20 rural communities in Mexico. And then I never planned to move to the United States. So when I came here, I realized about the huge need of bilingual registered dietitians, and not only dietitians, healthcare providers in general. So 6 years ago, I know how it is to struggle with the language. I know how it feels being in the physician's doctor and wanting to ask questions and wanting to explain my symptoms in a better way and not being able to because of the language barrier. And then I realized about the huge disparities in the minority groups, in the health disparities. And I found out that only 3% of the registered dietitians are Hispanic. Mm. So that really motivated me to become a registered dietitian here in the United States. And, you know, it's been like very fulfilling when I see my patients' faces just lighting up like, oh, my God, you speak Spanish. And they ask questions and because they feel this trust and this connection with me. And it's very, like, really, really nice and very fulfilling for me.
That's lovely. So let's talk about specifically within the Latino community. We talk about high instances of diabetes. So how prevalent is diabetes in this community?
So yes, actually the prevalence of diabetes in Hispanic population is higher than the national average. So actually the prevalence over 18 years old is in Hispanic population is 13.2 versus 8% in white non-Hispanic. And actually we know that Hispanic is 1.0 times more likely to be diagnosed with diabetes than white. Also, it's very sad to know that Mexican and Puerto Ricans are about twice likely to die from diabetes. And actually, the prevalence of obesity and diabetes are higher in Mexican Americans than in Mexico.
So that's interesting. So the prevalence, so what you're saying is the prevalence of obesity and diabetes is higher within Mexican Americans than those in Mexico.
Yes. And you could think because, you know, in Mexico, since it's a third world country and there's more like lower income, you'll think that here in the United States, because they emigrate because of a better quality of life, you'll mm-hmm. think, well, they are doing better health-wise, but that's not the case.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So what contributes to this disparity? Why does this exist today?
Well, the answer is not that simple. There's a lot of factors involved in this problematic. Of course, there is genetics. Genetically speaking, we are more susceptible to obesity and a higher insulin resistance. But other social cultural factors as lower income, lack of access to high quality healthcare, education, also food insecurity, of course, the language barrier, the lack of linguistically and culturally competent healthcare providers, food insecurity, level of acculturation, and lack of marketing campaigns specific for Latinos. So there's an old phrase that says that we are what we eat. So maybe the opposite is also true, and we eat what we are. And because if we want to really make an impact in our Latino community, we need to understand that it takes more than just to provide information. Sometimes the how and to whom that information is delivered is more than important than the what. So understand how our food choices are influenced by culture, and to know more about the misconception in the Latino diet will really help to provide tailored nutrition therapy that could really have an impact on the eating habits in our Latino community.
And when you talk about, sort of working with them and meeting them where they are, right? So look at the influence of culture and how that impacts their food. And I love the saying that you use, that if we are what we eat what we are. That is so powerful. Mm-hmm. But then if we are meeting them sort of where they are, right? And then if we sort of peel back the layers, we can see that Latino cuisines are high on carbs, right? So you've got Mexican foods that include tortillas, rice, potatoes, beans. You've got Caribbean foods that have yuca and plantain again and rice. Sometimes these carbs are consumed within the same meal itself.
Yes.
There's also a concern for sugary drinks, right? So what is your approach then in providing nutrition therapy to them, meeting them where they are, and yet sort of being conscious of where you want them to go?
Okay, so yes, that's correct. And I think it's very important for registered dietitians and healthcare providers to understand that those items like tortillas, beans, rice, potatoes are mixed in the same plate. So for example, I will say some typical Mexican dish could be beans with rice, some potatoes with chorizo, and 3 to 5 tortillas on the side. So right there is just around like 200 grams of carbohydrates in just one meal. So for example, the American dietary guidelines recommend for all day around 250 grams of carbohydrates. Yes. So this is all your carbohydrate requirements right there. So I believe, so just tell our Latino community, do not eat tortillas or not eat rice is definitely not the answer. So because we know that restrictive diets does not work in the long term. And also research has found that there is an association between a greater level of acculturation and a higher risk of diabetes. So we understand acculturation by the process which an individual adopts the norms, the values, and the practices of the new host society. So we will have better outcomes if we teach our Latino patients how to do modifications on their traditional diet rather than have them adopt an American diet. So for this, we need really take time in explaining portion control, how to pair these foods. For example, we know that if we pair carbs with fiber, we're going to slow the spike of glucose. So we can recommend way to prepare vegetables and combinations that make sense for them. And for example, there are some strategies that I like to use in MNT. One of them is, for example, the change system. So I explain my patients, for example, eating one tortilla, it's very nutritional, similar to eat 1/3 of rice or one small potato. So for example, I can tell my patients, oh, for the lunch, you have 4 servings of carbs. And they can do different combinations. They could either select, or I can eat 4 tortillas or 2 tortillas and 2/3 of a cup of rice. So that's more like easy for them and they can take more pleasure of that. And another strategy that I like to use is just to provide different dishes and different combinations with these vegetables. And I would like to mention that I believe my plate is a great tool to use, but it's important to point out that the way that my plate was designed here in the United States, it leaves a lot of gaps of misinformation for Latino communities. Because in my plate, we include, for example, starchy vegetables and beans in the same section of grains. So for example, the my plate that we use in Mexico, we use those separations. So it's just very important to for the registered dietitians to take into account those kind of things.
I see. And so even my plate, as as sort of this solution that is implemented throughout the United States, even that has its gaps, right? That also has sort of a lot to be left for, because it's sort of taking like this one size fits all approach, and it doesn't speak to cultured foods. It doesn't speak to other ethnicities and their eating habits. So that's interesting. Now there's a strong emphasis in the Latino population on herbal self-care remedies. How do you go about addressing that? What do you do?
So yes, I found a really interesting study research according to the Journal of American Board of Family Medicine that say that 80.3% of Hispanic patients reporting to use herbs and natural remedies. So I think this is huge. And sometimes even if the physician or the nurse asks if they are using some natural remedies, they are not going to report that. So I believe this is some information that we have to take into account. And another thing is to know that, for example, I've witnessed this, and in my experience, it's very common to use teas in the to treat some colic and gastrointestinal issues, mainly in infants. And you know, this could have some interactions. And also, we know teas, they don't have any nutrition value or any calories, and this could lead to some kind of malnutrition, undernutrition in infants. So, for instance, I believe it's mentioned to have this information in mind. Also, in Latino communities, it's very common to use licuados, that is just the Mexican word for smoothies. So sometimes this kind of licuados and different mix of vegetables, Latino community has a misconception that has like some cure properties on diabetes. And we use these herbs and natural remedies as substitution sometimes for medicine like metformin and insulin, because there is like a lot of misconception and myths around the use of insulin. So I believe this is very important, even if they don't report to use herbs, just to provide this information that there is not herbs or natural remedy that could substitute the medical treatment of diabetes.
Interesting. And you said, just to clarify, you said that number is 80%. So 80% of Latinos are reporting using herbs according to this, to the study.
Yes. My goodness. And okay. Sometimes, as I say, they're not going to report because they feel like the physician is not going to understand. Sometimes they don't know the name of the herbs in English. So even if the physician asks, hey, have you using this herb, they sometimes don't understand.
Mm-hmm. And the dangerous part about that is they almost substitute the herbs instead of having the metformin, the insulin. They try to switch that out, and that can be dangerous.
Of course. Mm-hmm. For example, there's like a big one misconception about that insulin got you blind. Mm-hmm. When actually is the lack of glucose control in the long term that is going to lead to retinopathy, you know?
Yes.
Unfortunately, that is the reality. So I believe that it's very important to have this information on hand for mm-hmm. the whole community.
So the misconception is that insulin causes blindness, whereas it is how further along the diabetes gets that, you know, that can cause, oh man.
Exactly. Okay.
What are some, I want to switch gears here and ask you, what are some grocery shopping habits that you observe in your Latino patients, and what changes do you recommend they make?
Yes, so this is very interesting because Latino food purchases are influenced by the family. Mm. We shop together. We love to go to the grocery market with our husband and with our kids. It's just an activity that we do. And also, we shop more often. Okay. So I believe in this area, there's a lot of niche of an opportunity. First, because food labeling, education, nutrition education and food labeling, it's going to be key in the Latino community. And also to understand that in order to be successful in the nutrition treatment in the Latino community, we need to enroll the family. We need to take into account the family, the husband, la abuelita. So make them to understand the importance of the health journey, the importance and the role of nutrition in the therapy of certain chronic diseases. So I guess this is really important. Also, according to Package Facts, more than 60% of the Latino community prefer to purchase organic food. So this is huge because there is this perception about organic food of being more natural or has fewer calories or has a greater nutrition density. So we just need to provide information about that, that just because it's organic, that doesn't mean has less calories. But also this could be like a great opportunity for us because we enjoy cooking demonstrations because we used to cook from scratch. We are open more to try new recipes. So this is great because we can use these techniques with Latino communities and it works because we love to cook and we love to go to the grocery market and shop. And also, for example, Hispanic children are more likely to influence food purchases decisions, mainly in the cereals and the snack areas. And we know that some of this food, like cereals and snacks, could be high in sugar content. And that's very important to, again, provide nutrition education about food labeling, because sometimes some of these products are marketed to be like healthy, and sometimes they are not. And also sugar drinks, it's a huge issue. We know like the consumption of sugar drinks are higher sometimes in lower income family or in Mexican Americans. And this is not a surprise because Mexico has the greater consumption per capita of soft drinks in the world.
Oh, wow.
There's also this misconception or myth that, for example, sport drinks or some juices, because are like they market by natural or healthy. So, yes, between children and mainly teenagers, like sport drinks and juicers, I highly use. So, again, nutrition education in those topics is going to be key to really make an impact in the eating habits in our Latino communities.
Mm-hmm. And my big takeaway here, that number surprised me, that 60% of Latinos buy organic foods. That is very interesting. All right. So with that, Karina, we are toward the end of the episode. And my favorite question at the end is, how can our listeners connect with you, learn more about your work?
Yes, of course, you can find me in my social media as your.mexican.dietitian. So you can find me also too, as I have a YouTube in Spanish, YouTube channel in Spanish, and you can find me also as Your Mexican Dietitian.
Lovely. And also follow Karina's work on all of our Yumlish pages. And we're going to link everything up on the show notes so that if you are trying to reach out, learn more, have questions about your own health, you can certainly do that. Again, it will all be linked in the show notes. So with that, Karina, I wish this episode could be like 2 hours long. It was great talking to you. In fact, we went over time, but you were giving all of these pieces of wisdom that I found were so useful and so relatable too. So I really appreciate your time. Thank you so very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. I love being part of Yumlish. Thank you.
So find Yumlish on all the social media accounts linked in our podcast show notes. Our Yumlish socials help you learn more about our mission at Yumlish, keep you updated on helpful tips for managing your diabetes, and giving you access to exciting opportunities with Yumlish. With that, to our listeners in Texas, Yumlish will be running a diabetes management course here in the Dallas region. If you are interested, email us at info@yumlish.com and we'll connect you over to that. Lastly, if you enjoy Yumlish podcast and know a healthcare expert working in the nutrition space, reach out to us on Instagram to nominate them. Send us a DM telling us who you want to nominate, what they do, and why you believe their work is making a difference in the lives of individuals to conquer chronic illness. Thank you again. Until next time, stay well. Thank you for listening to the Yumlish podcast with Shireen. If you like our show and want to learn more, you can find information at yumlish.com. You can also leave us a review here. We will see you at the next one. And remember, your health always comes first.